5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, one and all. It is the new Panic Room, episode 307 on the 13th of April, 2023. It's been a week. It has been a week this week, and it's still only Thursday, but thankfully it is Friday tomorrow, and looking forward to the weekend. I think with it being a holiday weekend, the last weekend, you know, trying to cram 4 days, sorry, 5 days into four is never fun, I have to say. But I'll tell you who is fun.
Woo. Yeah,
it's a bit of a lame
so
word.
I know.
Woo.
You know, I swear, I think the last few years we've all aged like 10 years as opposed to just one or two. So, this
definitely,
used to
yes.
be the time I was just coming, coming. This is, I'm getting my second wind. I'm good to go until like 2 or 3 in the morning. And now I'm like, man, it's getting late. I could go.
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just think we're old now,
Officially,
you know,
I think we are, yes.
Yeah, I want my warm milk and a book and my blankie. I don't know. So, yeah, I'm glad that it's Thursday. I'm even happier tomorrow's Friday, and then we have the weekend, and then we get to do it all over again. That's my favorite part.
Well, that's the thing. You get excited. It's Saturday morning. You're weekend and everything, and then suddenly it's Sunday night, and you're all sad.
Yes. Maybe we're just
sad. It
just
goes too fast. It goes by too fast, I have to say.
So I wanted to bring up the fact that, when you mentioned that show, The Yellow Jackets, a couple weeks in a row,
mm-hmm.
I actually gave it a try, and I ended up binge-watching the whole first season in less than a week, and it was so good. I have not started season two yet. Part of me wants to watch season one over again. That it was just so good, and
get into season two, because I just seen episode two or three, and it gets better.
I can't imagine.
It's pretty cool.
I think that was my fear, is that, I'm like, they did season one so good. Like, how can it get better? If you say it gets better.
Yeah, it happens, before, with some stuff that, the second or subsequent series just don't stack up, But this, honestly, take my word for it, it's got off to a really good start.
Oh, it's so good. It's so disturbing. I remember one scene from just season one, and it gets to that point where you're like, this is dark, and it's probably only going to get darker. So, I'm really enjoying it, though. Yeah, but I can't. I have the thing where I want the Hearts and Flowers and the Happily Ever After, and unfortunately, I don't see one at all.
Yeah, I can't see that happening for any of the cast, to be honest.
Characters. Yeah, and that's
kind
of sad.
They're all pretty fucked up, it's good. I knew you would enjoy it. Funny enough, I came across American Psycho on. I was just flicking through it on board, flicking through Netflix as you do. I haven't seen it in years. That was an interesting. It was.
Yeah.
It was. I tried to read the book a few weeks ago, actually, again. Three times I've tried to read that book, and I just can't get into it.
Wow.
But the movie was good.
Left
you so. Christian Bale was just phenomenal. He just looks like a lunatic anyway. But
I was at the hairdresser today, and she were talking about TV shows, and she mentioned the show You. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Do you watch it?
All of them. I watched the last season. It was terrible. Season one was brilliant. Season two was okay. I don't know if this was three or four, but it was just bloody awful. I just thought it was just there's a bit in it where he did his bit where he got the, again, spoiler alert, he makes this Perspex cage to keep his prisoners in, keep his victims in. And he'd managed somehow on a busy London street. He'd built it in an abandoned abandoned part of the underground. So he'd managed to somehow, on an academic salary, to get this Perspex cage, custom built. Because as far as I know, you can't just buy them off Amazon. And it custom built, delivered, lugged down that down these stairs, in constructed in this room, on his own.
That's ambitious,
and with nobody seeing him. And it's funny enough, it was directly across from an Indian restaurant and takeaway, which, you know, is a pretty busy place in London. And it's just like, oh, you fucking kidding me. It was just... But yeah, the first, season, I was like you, first season, I binged it start to finish. Couldn't not, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I read the book years before the show came out, and the book was amazing. I really just, it was one of those books that I'm like, everybody, you have to read this book. And I was obsessed with it. Book two came out. It was good. It wasn't as good as the first book, but I mean, there was just something special about that book. So when the show came out, I was so excited. And, you know, I watched episode one and I was like, yeah, it's all right. And two and three. And I'm like, I'm kind of bored. And, you know, they don't do it like the book. They added a new character that I didn't, you know, I'm like, this isn't in the book at all. And, you know, I'm trying not to be one of those people that's how they do in the book. But at the same time, I think that people who are fans of the book aren't really fans of the show, and people who are fans of the show have not read the book. So that's my opinion. I've tried, and people say how brilliant it is and how much they love it. And if you read the book, it's just so different. And they, you know, it's even written. Yeah, the narrative is really cool. The way, I mean, it's, yeah, you just have to read it. So, and that's what made it special, not the actual storyline, I don't think. It was how it was written. So, I know. The hairdresser. Anyway, my hairdresser was like, you have to watch it. It's so good. And I'm like, maybe I'll try it. Because I have so many friends that tell me how great it is. So maybe if I power through it, it'll get better.
To be fair, I wouldn't watch the new season. I think there's far better things that you can spend your time doing.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest. I kind of got into it and thought, you know, maybe it'll get better, but it doesn't.
Awful. Yeah, I'm definitely at the portion of the Yellow Jackets where I'm telling everybody about it and how great it is. And then when they won't at least watch the trailer, I'm like, why? Why won't you do this? Why are you not doing this for me? It's like I want to, like, tie people up and make them watch it because I enjoyed it so much. But, you know,
That's because you're kinky that way. So you just want to tie people up anyway, to be honest.
Yeah, not everybody likes that, I guess. Yeah, I don't understand.
Well, they're wrong then. They're wrong.
I know. They really are.
Not proper people. Not proper people.
It's true.
I had a week because obviously, you know, Monday was the day off, and I did a bit of work and went to the mall with my daughter and sort of hung out. And it's some enforced sort of relaxing time. But Tuesday, got some friends are shooting a short film as a sort of a promo film because they're going to try and get investment to get the full film made. And so me and my daughter were extras.
Cool.
I mean, there's some. I have to send you the picture. I was a prisoner.
Yeah.
Literally just in the background. She got to be an astral spirit guide, which was kind of cool.
That is super cool. You don't tell me anything anymore. I did not know about this at all.
No. But to be fair, it was just a lot of sitting around and chatting and, you know, because I did warn her because she was all excited. And I was I've made short movies. I've been on the other side of the camera, you know, but directing and producing, but I said there's a lot of sitting around. There's literally just a lot of waiting for like 10 minutes. And I used to marvel at the people, the actors and actresses used to work with me because, you know, their scene would be, you know, later in the day and they'd arrive early on set and then invariably things ran longer and they would just wait around all day just to do a quick couple of minutes scene. It was just unbelievable. But I guess, you know, that's what they want to do. You know, that's their
yeah,
dream.
Their passion.
Their dream is to just to sit around and do nothing. Like,
yeah, that's my dream too, though, to sit around and do nothing and get paid for it. That's my dream too.
Well, do you know, it's funny. They actually, bless them, they actually paid her. She got paid at the end of the day. She got a check and she was delighted with that. She got paid for that.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I would have done that for free, yeah. That's cool, though.
Absolutely.
You definitely
got to
send me the pictures. Yeah.
I will. Yeah, I look.
Yeah.
Do you know, I look very good. I look very fetching in orange, I have to say. I make a good prisoner, which is kind of scary.
It's not too much of a stretch or anything, yeah.
No, hopefully it's not foreshadowing. But so, anywho, what have we got on the show this evening? If anything, is it just us?
No,
we need
do.
To have another
well,
show where it's just us two, I think, you know?
You know, I think we should too, because it, and you know what, even for, you know, our one listener, it's still entertaining when it's just us. But yes, we have two returning guests. I absolutely love it when people agree to come back because they already know what they're getting into. And so it's all their fault. I mean, you know, we can judge
absolutely.
Them for agreeing to come back. Yeah. But yes, I'm very excited. We have our first guest of the night. We have horror author Kenzie Jennings. And it's been a while since we talked to her. She got a new book out and I'm very excited. So I'm going to introduce her again and then we can, you know, bring her on and it's all exciting. So yeah, our first guest of the evening, we have horror author Kenzie Jennings.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
I'm totally engrossed in your conversation, especially about Yellowjackets.
Have you seen it?
I love it.
Oh,
somebody told
gosh.
Me. Somebody said to me that after seeing the first season, somebody said to me, "This seems like something that you would write." And I said, yep, exactly. It has animals in it.
Yes, it does. It is so good. I'm obsessed. Like, I really am. Everybody I come in contact with, I'm like, you have to watch the show. And that's one reason I have not tried season two yet, because I was worried that it wasn't going to live up to season one. And, I'm just, it's so good.
I haven't started season two yet. I'm waiting for all of you to air because I'm tired of episodic stuff. We're so used to now just binging, and I don't want to have to wait a week for it.
Well, see, I have a theory about that. When I watched Game of Thrones, I binged it. And, you know, there's so much going on in that show. And I think it's very easy to miss things when you binge it, when you watch one after another. Then, you know, if you watch an episode and then you have like a week to kind of think about it and then you watch. So I kind of like the, you know, the non-binging, even though I did binge Yellowjackets. It was just that good. But I do think you get more out of it if you have to wait that week. So. Yeah,
it,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't But we are instant. We do like the instant gratification. So there's definitely something to be said for that, too. So I just don't know what to do. It just makes me stressed.
The problem I have with that, I will binge it, and then I'm sad. I'm sad because it's done, and I have to pace myself. You know, after that, I'm not going to watch them all. I'm going to watch maybe two now and then and span it out over a week or so. But yeah, sometimes I just get into something and just, and then I'm all upset because it's finished now.
It's bad. It's over too. I hate that.
Mm.
Yes, I went through that with The Last of Us, the first season, and That was so good, too. I mean, that was a show that I want to give it like a month or so and then watch it over again, because that was one where it got over with. And I was like, now I don't know what to do with myself. Like, I don't know what am I supposed to do now?
Yeah.
So, oh, that was good. But, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, no, I just said we've gotten spoiled. We've gotten so spoiled.
Yes.
With all the streams out there. We're just like, it's just instant gratification. I have a confession. I've been the last season of You. I can't remember a thing about it. That's how non-honest I was.
Oh, that's definitely makes me not want to really watch this. Did you read the book though? Have you read the first book?
I read the first one, and I liked it a lot. I liked the voice, and I was really impressed with the actors on that voice too. So that was great. I have not read any of the following books though. So
yeah. The second one was okay. I mean, it definitely wasn't the same, but it was okay. And that's as far as I've gotten. And I'm, I don't know. I definitely have friends who just rave about the show and they just love it. And, you know, I think for me, my favorite serial killer will always be Dexter. So, so I do have that, that I kind of, I just love Dexter. Yeah. But, I don't know.
Well,
maybe I'll try it someday.
Dexter had to go. It was time for Dexter to be over. I hate to be that controversial, but I was sad that thing that they stuck in there just to give us answers, and then that was it. Okay. Well, it was still better than the end of the series itself, I guess.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, when they had that little mini series season, they had, I was so excited. And to be honest, I was hoping that I was hoping that Harrison was going to like pick up, where Dexter left off or something, and we might get a show with Harrison. I had all these envisioned, these things that, and none of that happened, so I was kind of sad.
Okay. That was close. You were right on the ball for a while, because it felt like he was going to take up the blade. He was going to take up the scalpel and do something.
So
he had the urge like bad. But had to give the tragedy and then keeping him from doing anything bad. I know.
Yeah.
It was so disappointing.
I know. Very sad. But, we could sit here all night and talk about shows, which is, kind of fun. I don't mind doing that at all. But you are here to talk to us about your book, Always Listen to Her Hurt. And tagline, if you listen, if you truly listen, only then will you understand her, and she may let you survive. Cool. Tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, my God. When I went to AuthorCon, I was trying to pitch this thing. Because it's a collection, and because you write collections of poetry, that you can't really capture a book in, like, a tagline, because it's a collection like that, because they're, like, all these different stories. So the only thing I can say about it is that I had to come up with a book, and I had been writing nothing but short stories and creative nonfiction for 2 years. I had not written, I'd written a couple of long things, I wrote half of a novel, and I wrote a whole novella, and the publisher that had wanted the novella decided they weren't going to do that anymore, so I said, okay, well, fine, wasted my time, but I've got it. So I just said, I got to do something. I haven't put out a book, and so I just kind of put them all, strung all the stories that I had together, and just put them in it, and the only thing that they all have in common with each other is that there is a very damaged woman at the center of all of them. And so I had to figure out how to do an intro for it and everything and find the right people to blurb it as well, and that was tricky too. But that's basically what it is. I mean, it's just a collection of shorts, stories, and a couple of creative nonfiction pieces. And they all just kind of meshed well. And, the people who've read it really like it. So, I'm like, okay, well, I'll do this again sometime.
And that cover, I have to say, I love the cover of it.
This was, I got a confession. This was a pre-made. And it just was so striking to me. That I just I felt like I lucked out on it or something, but yeah, I just so creepy.
I would have never guessed it was pre-made. Never, ever. That's really good. Yeah.
I'm telling you, they're getting better. Just cover art is just getting, because people can't afford it anymore, and artists are, you know, they're struggling right now, and I wish that we could afford these sorts of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, pre-mades now, I've seen a lot of bad ones, of course, but lately I've been seeing they've been getting better and better, and I think that's because software is becoming cheaper as well, or free.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's the cover. And I got a couple of people at AuthorCon saying, but she wasn't in any of the stories. I said, she's a creepy chick. They're creepy in all the stories.
You know,
what do you want?
No, I have to ask, with, you know, every story having some kind of damaged woman on there, is that any kind of indication of some damage that we don't know about, Kenzie?
Oh, about me? Oh,
yeah.
I mean, you guys talking about getting old. I mean, early on, we all have battle scars, right? So,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
And some of the stories, yeah, are personal. The creative nonfiction is, but some of them are surprisingly, like, the people that who read it thought that the stories that weren't personal were, because they were indirectly related to me in some way. Like, for instance, there are two really short pieces in there about teachers. and I'm a professor, you know, so.
Right.
Oh, that's about you. I said, no, I don't want to kill people. You understand that, right? Where did this come from? So, yeah, but I guess, yeah, I was telling some students the other day, too, some sixth writing students, that, you know, every piece of fiction has you in it. I mean, no matter what.
Yes.
And if it's not, you're not in the center. But don't make the story entirely about you.
Yeah, I remember reading something. I went through a phase where I just loved Chuck Palahniuk, and I read everything he'd written. And he had, what was that one, Stranger Than Fiction or something like that it was called, and where he talks about everything in his books, you know, he's seen it, you know, I mean, like, and I remember thinking back to, like, Invisible Monsters and stuff and going, you know, it was about, you know, they would go to the houses or, you know, that were for sale and look through the cabinets for, you know, medication and stuff like that. I'm like, I mean, I was just like, wow, all this, you know, all these things that are in this book, you know, he's actually read about or witnessed or something. And I'm like, wow, because I think it is very true. Even while we say we are, you know, fiction writers for the most part, I think there is truth to everything that we write and a little piece of us in everything. And so, I mean, knowing now that I've released the poetry that I write, and I know how personal it is to me, I don't even know if half the people who read my stuff actually realize just how personal it is.
I mean, having read your work, you know, I think that it will be very apparent to them who you are through your poetry.
So when I read other writers, I'm always going, I wonder if this is real. I wonder if I do that all the time now. I wonder, you know, I'm pretty sure nobody's killing people and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, we really don't know. But
say that horror is supposed to be very therapeutic, right? So
yes,
it's a place. Our inner demons, and I'm like, okay, so that character.
I definitely think horror writers are way more adjusted human beings than, like, maybe the romance authors, because you know, we get to write about, you know, chopping people's heads off, and I think it's you know, we get done and we're like, whew, I feel so much better now, you know.
It's like, hold you in a horror. City are the splatterpunk extreme riders.
Yes.
That is crazy. I was not prepared for that. When I went to KillerCon that first time, I was not prepared for people who wrote about butchery and vileness to be sweet, kind, funny, genuine. And it was just, wow, you have some real therapy to get through in your writing.
It's funny. We had one of the authors that has been on the show. I don't know if he's been on it more than once, but I started reading his book. He sent it to me. It was Aaron Beauregard was on. And what was that? I'm trying to think. Oh, The Slob. That's what it was. And, oh, my goodness, I could not get through it. And he's such a great writer, but there was just, I think it was the – was it a vacuum cleaner, or there was some scene that I was just like, I can't keep going here. And I was, and he was on the show and he was so nice and so just awesome. And I'm like, you wrote this?
No.
So, yeah.
I met, and Loki, is that his name? The way it's pronounced. I met them both at on like two. I'm bounding out. Hey, Kenzie, we just wanted to meet you. And I'm going, oh, my God, that nasty ass book about kids on the playground. I read his book, Playground, right before I went to AuthorCon. And I'm going to talk about doing horrible things to children in a book. Just like, wow. That, but, yeah, I mean, just the nicest guys, you know, and they have like a trio now with Chris Triana as well. And all three of them are just so sweet. So, and just, like, depraved as hell, but so sweet.
I have to admit, every time, you know, you guys have a convention and everybody posts all the pictures, and I am so jealous. And I'm like, James, me and you have to, you know, do this sometime and like, you know, get a Hellbound table going. And I think that would be so much fun. I do. I get jealous every time.
Definitely.
You guys need to do killer con.
We do. Well, I want to hear more about Always Listen to or Hurt. I think that we had we have an excerpt that you were going to read for us.
Yeah. So, okay. I am going to read the introduction. It's kind of a foreword, I guess. I always think a foreword is always written by somebody else. This is the very beginning before you actually start reading the book, obviously. And it's titled, Do You Know Why You're Reading This?
Nice.
There are plenty of us who were haunted when we were children. For some of us, the unlucky ones, that haunt still lingers. When I was little and alone, there was a huge grinning face that had settled into the wall right beside my bunk bed. It spoke to me, but only when I was just about to fall asleep, right when I barely skimmed the edge of a fuzzy dream. It didn't want me to sleep. If I turned the other way in bed, keeping my back to the wall face, I angered it well enough that it would send its pet skittering into the bedroom from the hallway, heading straight towards me. My only respite was to sleep on my back, but I'd heard from other children at the Montessori school I'd attended that if you slept on your back, you might swallow your tongue. No matter what direction I'd face, I'd eventually die some awful way. The wall-faced pet was always hungry and would burst into my bedroom, never in a single form. On some nights, the pet would be a Cerberus, its three heads foaming at the mouths and snarling, snapping their jaws at my face. Other nights, it would be in the form of a tall, stick figure of a man with a gelatinous, sticky mask covering his features, making it seem as if he was melty and bubbling. Some of the goo would drip onto my cheeks and burn my skin. Every so often, when the wall face was particularly angry with me, it would swallow me whole, shrouding me in the cavernous pitch of its wide, wide mouth. And it would hurt. It would hurt terribly. When I was 4, I finally had a baby sister, and I'd hoped that she'd see the wall face too. Either she'd help me fight him, or she'd be eaten too whenever he was angry. At any rate, I'd never be alone again, no matter what. Over the years, the wall face haunted me in various guises. Its sneakiest visage was that of a nice guy. The nice guys were almost always eaters. Their sustenance was often a constantly mending heart, always trapped in a cycle of love, betrayal, and pain. One nice guy even confessed to me that out of all of his partners, I was the most interesting. He then ate away at what made me so interesting to the point where I was not all that interesting anymore. I was drained of my individuality as I worked to keep him nourished. The wall face eventually disappeared, reappearing again only in memories and nightmares. I told my mother about the wall face and all of its forms whenever it popped again in my life. Like many mothers before her, my mother had experienced her own version of the wall face. Those hungry beings, both metaphysical and physical, drain us to the point where we become nothing but shallow husks. We eventually grow exhausted and famished. I startled my mother when I relayed to her that the wall face had kept me broken. I think I surprised her because I had her listen, and no one had done the same for her when her wall face had chewed on her heart. As I write this now, I realized just how important it was to listen, always listen to her hurt. Listening could have saved her, saved us all. Going back to my original question, do you know why you're reading this book? It isn't just about the stories themselves. Storytelling is wonderful, sure, but there's something else. It isn't specifically about me either, but I thank you anyway. No, you're reading this book because you know how important it is to always listen to the one in your life who's hurting, the one who's facing monsters and unsure of what to do. You're here because you've empathy. You're here because you've had a wall face that's haunted your life as well. There you go.
That was great.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
Now, this is in audiobook. I just always wonder when you're listening to the audiobook, how odd is that? Because these are your feelings that are down in a book that, you know, just you poured your heart out, and then somebody else is reading it. Do you ever go, well, that's just weird?
It really depends. The narrator for this book reached out through a mutual friend of ours who happens to be, you guys had her on her show, Bridget Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And she introduced me to Cassandra Arnold, who did the narration for it. And Cassandra, she has a great voice for this. And it's not parallel to my own, but I still feel like it's me still reading the book. So it didn't feel
interesting.
This particular project didn't feel that bad when I, you know, didn't feel that weird when I listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Splatter West did, Red Station did, because it sounds like I drank a lot of whiskey. And Deception was great. I picked her out, though, so... So if you don't have control over it, I guess that would be the case. And Death's Head Press, they did all of the Splatter Western audio. You know, they got all the people to do the audio narration, so they didn't really pick that person. I don't mean to be demeaning or anything towards this woman, but it just was not picturing what you were describing. I was like, I don't think a whiskey, you know, a husky kind of voice like that would work, but, you know, whatever they think.
I do think sometimes when we'll have an anthology that I'm looking for a voice for, it's very hard because, you know, in an anthology, you've got so many different stories and, you know, well, where one of the voices, it'll work great for one of the stories, might not be as a great match for a different one. But, you know, that's just kind of, you know, I just always hope it's at least a good voice actor that can kind of, you know, do anything. So
someone, I always like the voice, there's like, I'm really fascinated with the whole audiobook thing, especially when they have a whole bunch of people to do it. Got that. That's like a freaking radio play whenever they do it.
I've tried to listen to those when they have like the dual narrators, and I'm like, yeah. I don't know, not that it confuses me, but it maybe jars me. So
yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. But we definitely have had some narrators that are guys, and they do like a woman's part, and but they've always done a really good job, and I'm always pretty excited when they get done, even though I'm like, I'm sorry, there's so many women parts in this.
Well, it's funny because it's not really about acting; it's about reading.
Yeah,
You don't have to be all exaggerated for it or anything. You just have to read it. And if you can't say it aloud, then obviously it's going to come across as stilted or odd, or like if they're doing a woman's voice and really trying to do a woman's voice.
Right.
Yeah, I thought about that.
So
whenever you have a reading and you've got, like, you're a woman author and you've got male characters, like, how do you approach that? It's probably the same thing, right? I say the same thing. It's like, just read it. Don't act it.
We did have an author one time that he had kind of a romance-y thing going on in the book, and so there was the a man and a woman, and he did not like the fact that the narrator was acting. He wanted pretty much just read it, and so when it came to the voice of the woman, he would make his voice a little softer, and so you could differentiate between the characters.
Yeah.
And he's like,
yeah,
I don't want them doing voices. And I'm like, well, it's not really doing a voice. He's just kind of, I definitely appreciate that when I'm listening to an audiobook, the different voices, don't quite understand how they do it because I can't do it, but I definitely appreciate it.
You hit the nail on the head though. It's just an octave, or it's just like it's slightly lower, slightly higher. It's not, or softer or whatever, but it's not this exaggerated. It's not like Terry Gilliam and Monty Python. It's not, you're not going to have this exaggerated female voice.
Right. Yeah. That wouldn't, that would be awful. So I hate that we are running out of time for our first segment. It never lasts long enough. You have to promise to come back and see us.
Of course, yes.
Yay! And before we let you go, tell us where we can find you online.
Well, I am all over social media. I'm on Facebook, obviously, Twitter, Instagram. You just look up Kenzie Jennings, you'll find me. I was going to say I'm on TikTok too now, and I really don't know what I'm doing on it. I'm too old for it. But I really do. So I'm like, you need to do TikTok. So, yeah. Look up my name. And I'm also, I have a website that I'm updating, KenzieJennings.com, and, of course, Amazon. So there you go.
Okay, for all of our listeners out there, go out and find Always Listen to Where It Hurts by Kenzie Jennings. And thank you so much, Kenzie. I can't wait to talk to you again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Yay.
Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, my blood is telling me it's break time. So I guess we'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
5, 4.
The Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
And baby, there you go. Take a black cat and a slip you down your shoulder. And in the morning, you'll know all you know.
Apologies for pressing the wrong button there. It's, that's what happened. It's been a week. It's been a week. And I understand the lovely Samantha's having a rough day as well. It's just been... I think we should...
Oh, yes.
We should just all stayed in bed, I think. And I just had the whole week off instead of just Monday.
Hi, Samantha. I know she's listening. At least I hope she's listening. But yes, we don't have our lovely Samantha this evening, and our week is going to be a little less lovely now that we've
there's a
know,
little
we,
less
we don't
lovely
have
in
her.
The week. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. But I'm sure she'll be back with us next week, as lovely as ever.
She better, yeah. She owes
she
us
yeah.
now, you know.
Oh, that sounds quite threatening, actually. Yeah, bitch. You better be.
I know, you know.
A bit aggressive.
I mean, yeah.
A little bit aggressive there, if you don't mind me saying. Even I'm a little bit scared now, you know. It's,
girls
frightened
are evil.
Me.
They really are. Yeah girls
yeah,
are
they
evil.
Are. Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely.
But, I think more it's just, you know, we sound scary, but we don't really follow through with it. We're hoping that the, we're just intimidating just on the, you know, how bitchy we can be. But I think for the most part, no, we're just evil. Never mind all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Remember, I'm raising a daughter, remember, and I know just
how nasty
girls can be. Absolutely,
It's true. You know, I have one of each too, and the girl.
Yeah,
is definitely...
I actually have two of each. If we're showing off, Girls are just, my son has just been very, very little drama over the years, but yeah, she's making up for it. It's pain.
Yeah.
All the drama. Yeah. But it's fun, actually, because I get to hear about all the drama and everything. It's kind of fun. You know, it's that whole little microcosm of, middle school life. I mean, she starts high school in the fall.
That's scary.
It's going to be the same drama, but tenfold. So,
you might want to start drinking now.
What do you mean, start?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I haven't done this to you in quite a while, actually, so I'm gonna do this.
Into a week in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on? And I say, hey, yeah, hey, yeah, yeah. I said, hey, what's going on? And I say,
so, Steve, what is going on in the wonderful world of Hellbound Books right now?
We have some wonderful, wonderful things.
Don't do a Donald Trump. There's some great things, some really good things, some goodly things. And I'm the best at things.
Yeah.
I'm the very best. Nobody understands things better than I understand things.
We have,
so
we have the
best
things.
There's got to be stuff
going
on.
Yeah. Actually, I'm very excited because I have a whole batch of audiobooks that are in the final stages right now, and I am so excited. Like, you know, we've had a couple of years now where we've had audiobooks, but they just keep getting better and better, and I'm so excited. This last batch, I just can't wait for, you know, them to go live because they're so good. So there's that. We just had the anthology of Splatterpunk, which I think I signed a narrator for that. And I'm,
fantastic. We have a narrator for that. That's brilliant.
I was really excited. Everything else, you'll probably have to tell all of us what's going on because I just work here, you know, I mean... I do what I'm told, you know. And
oh yeah, right.
So what's going on?
The Splatterpunk anthology, which was launched last week, I believe, week before now, very well received. Some tremendous stories in that. We will be publishing the second novel from Erin Lewis, who is actually on the show next week. Who co-wrote Stripper Noir with Armand Rosenmiller. Hopefully I've got his name right.
Mm-hmm.
And her book, South of Heaven, is just... There's no other word to describe it. There's no words to describe it. It's just fucked up, but in a great way. It is just brilliant. It's just... it's so off the wall. It's... You know, it's the floor. I mean, it's just brilliant. I'm struggling to explain to describe it.
It's
horror.
Often,
it's satire. It's just things that would make you. I mean, from the Teresa who edited it, bless her, she would message me and say, "I just don't get this. This is just what the fuck." She said, "Do you realise that this is happening?"
Nice.
Oh yeah, brilliant! It's going to be a must for absolutely every horror fan out there, and I can't wait! I can't wait to hear that one in audiobook. That'll be brilliant. That will be a hell of an audiobook.
I will be excited to get working on it.
Also, yeah, on that, we have just signed an author with five books. Got five books all ready to go in our ongoing expansion of our thriller noir subgenre. And they range from sort of, you know, steamy, twisty-turny psycho thrillers to dystopian thrillers to everything, sociopath, psychopath. I mean, if it's dark and twisted, it's within these books, and everyone is an absolute gem. So, and they're going to be rolled out over the next 5 or 6 months in all the formats. So they will be all audio booked up at some point. So yeah, lots of stuff going on. Plus we're in talks with and I'm not going to name names, not going to spoil anything, with a celebrity over in England. We'll be publishing his short story collection on June 16th. He will be on the show around then as well. Incredibly funny guy. Mm-hmm. One of my he's actually a comedian, and I've known him as a comedian pretty much all my life. Very, very funny guy, but fuck me, what a dark imagination. It's just some of the shorts. In fact, one of my favorites in the collection is called Velvet Elvis, and I'm not going to spoil it. Mm-hmm. But it is just brilliant. It's just darkly comedic, but brutal, sad. That is by far my favorite short stories ever, by anyone, even by me.
Wow.
You know, I like my own stuff. So yeah, we are still, you know, sifting through all the submissions that we get on a regular basis to find our next great Hellbound novel. So keep sending them in, folks.
I have to say, with the comedian that we signed, I have just found the perfect narrator for his book, and I have to say I absolutely love this guy. He auditioned for Toilet Zone 2 of ours, and I had already promised that one to Isaiah because Isaiah did book one, so he just, you know, is automatically he was going to get 2 and 3. So I couldn't give it to
Isaiah is he doing 3 as well?
Yeah, Isaiah, yes, he's on it right now. But this narrator, he put in an audition for 2 before I had signed Isaiah, and I loved it so much that I downloaded it and kept it myself because it was so good. And I ended up writing him and asking him if he would audition for, you know, some of our other books, and he did, and we worked with him, and he was great. So I was super excited when he agreed to do this project that we're not saying what it is yet. So I'm excited because he's just so good. I could
brilliant.
Just listen to
yeah.
him.
Well,
I'm
obviously, as the resident Brit on the team, I had my my two cents worth in there. So it was exciting stuff. But anyway, back to this evening. Hopefully I'll press the right damn button this time. But it's not happened for a while, you know. But So what's happening? What's happening next, Xtina?
Yes, I am again. We've had this guest on before, and I just love it when they agree to come back because they should know better, but they don't. And so we have our second guest of the evening. We have award-winning horror writer Glenn Hirschberg.
Hello.
Hello. Great to be back with you both. You all sound so happy messing up the rooms we're all in. It's great.
that's our charm, I think. I really
I think so
think,
too.
You know, yeah. you know, if sometimes I go back and listen to some of the old shows, and we definitely have gotten better. As I think this is year six or something crazy like that. But so I definitely listen back to some of the older shows, and I cringe a little bit occasionally. But we always had so much fun, we really did, and we still do.
I mean,
do.
Most important thing,
going.
And it shows. It definitely shows.
Yeah.
So makes
and
it easy to come be a guest.
Yeah, we've had some amazing, amazing guests on, and I think that's definitely my favorite part, is getting to meet all these amazing authors, and, you know, sometimes they're from around the world. I remember we had a guest on one time that was in, oh my gosh, where was she calling from? Vietnam.
Was it Vietnam?
She
sounded,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and she sounded like she was just in the other room. That's how clear it was, and I was just like, wow. And then we had, I think, who was that author that had that really, really thick Scottish accent that I could not understand? But
oh,
it was
Trevor
really
Kennedy. I could understand, Trev. You couldn't. I
could
understand perfectly.
Not a bit. Yeah, I remember messaging you every so often, being like, what are you talking about? It was so cool.
Awesome. I enjoyed listening to Kenzie tonight. She had lots of good things to say about writing and about audio recording and about reading. Because I'm also one that's a weird line between reading aloud and performing. And they're really different things. And it sounds like you're all doing a ton of audiobook stuff, which is great. I've had a bunch of stuff just come out on audiobook too. And it is it's really interesting hearing how different narrators approach this stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It
really can change the feel of a work a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, for the narrator, you know, if they get so invested in somebody else's work that it kind of becomes their baby as well. Often on the show, I'll like to invite the narrator on when the book goes live, and we have the narrator and the author on, and I think that's so cool. I really do.
I like that.
Yeah.
And I feel like I almost, if I've written anything that happens with the narrator and they start to own it, I almost don't even mind. I don't even mind if it's not what I had in mind. You know, there's that sort of thrill of, okay, those are my words, I guess. But now they're just out in the world and they're everybody's words. And they meant enough for somebody to think up that with it. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, I definitely agree. We've had some authors who, when they hear the narration, you know, and we let our authors have a say in that whole process. We, you know, I send them auditions, and they, you know, they can either say no, not at all, or yeah, I kind of like that. And so the whole process, they have a lot of say in. But we have definitely had ones that are a little harder to please, and, you know, they're like, oh, they didn't say this right, and they didn't say that right, and so there's occasions that I have to go, but it's this. You know, even though this is your baby, you birthed this. Occasionally, the narrator, can kind of give it their own. They interpret it a little differently, and so that's definitely a weird line right there. You know, when do you say no? Even myself, I've had a couple of my poems and like excerpts that a narrator has.
Oh, with poetry, it must be especially strange. With poetry, I bet it's especially unnerving because you're hearing I believe in the rhythm of prose too, but that's a whole other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Hearing poems in other voices must be really a whole different experience. Is it?
Yes, it is, because the girl, Becky Lane, she's a great narrator, and she's done a couple of excerpts for me, and she does such a great job. But there's the first time I hear it, I'm like, well, that's not how I wrote that. And I'm like, whoa, it still sounds really good though. So, you know, because she didn't write it. So of course she's not in my head, you know, but I think that, you know, for all of us writers, hearing our words coming out of other people's mouths just is so strange, but it's
kind of
cool.
But on the other hand, if you wrote something that was powerful enough that she heard something in her head. That's, you know, what a great thing. What a lucky, amazing, alchemical thing that is.
Yeah,
so,
I really...
I'm all for it. I like the whole process.
Yeah. So you are here to talk to us about your book, Tell Me When I Disappear, which is an awesome title. a collection...
You'll hear where it came from. I'm sorry, go ahead.
With creeping dread about what's being lost and what that will cost and I did not read this before I started reading this and now I'm all jumbled up. Just tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's like a lot of my stuff. I remember this from last time I came on your show too, and I came right after Samantha doing one of her extreme horror reviews, and mine is more the kind that whispers at you after you go to sleep. I aim to murmur at you and unsettle that way and stay with you after you wake up and you're not even sure what it is that's so unsettling. And I think these stories, you'll hear where the title came from in the little excerpt later. But even more than most of my stories, I think, these are they're extreme atmosphere stories, not extreme splatter stories. And they really are about, I think, all the different ways in which we seem to be fucking up everything. You know? And so they're not, none of them are directly issue stories, or they're not, it's more just about what's happening to people, all of us who are having to live through this age where the planet's heating up and we seem to be turning on each other and we seem to be dissolving into our computers, or the computers are going to come out and dissolve our jobs or whatever. And so there's all this anxiety floating around, and that's always been where my spooky stuff has kind of lived. I think I've always, someone really early, an editor really early, said that you kind of write people and their ghost stories. And I've always liked that. And I feel like this book is probably more like that than most of mine have been for a while. So they're quiet, but that doesn't, to me, it's a kind of quiet that, yeah, but I hope if I did it right, it's going to follow you around.
I did talk about... I couldn't finish the really gruesome extreme horror book, but I think it is the atmospheric ones that just they stick with you, and they're the kind that when I get up in the middle of the night to go to the restroom or something, and I'm like, don't look in the corner, you're gonna see something really scary, or that is the kind of scary stuff that because it haunts you, and I think that is even spookier than the blood spraying everywhere. I'd much rather watch that. Yeah.
I'm sure you are. I mean, I know James and Ed, both of you have been at this for a long time, and I'm sure you've given a lot of thought to how does this actually work. And when I've taught it, I talk to my students a lot about if you look at most of the horror movies, say, that people think are great horror movies, 75% of them are pictures of stairways, pictures of halls in the dark, like exactly what you're talking about, like what you see as you're wandering down your hall in the dark. And the empty space and what we imagine might be there, that's where the real memorable terror is to me. The monsters are almost a relief if and when they come, because, okay, now there's something to fight.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling, that creep, the anxiety that gnaws at you and never stops, how do you fight that? So.
Oh, you're going to talk. Yeah, and I have to go to bed after this, so thanks. Why don't we I think you had an excerpt that you're going to read for us and try to really creep us out. And thanks.
In a quiet kind of way, and it's my pleasure. And I hope I'm entering into the spirit of the show. I aim to bring joy, just our weird kind of joy. So I Kenzie was really smart and, you know, read the beginning. I'm reading from the middle of the story just because I felt like I wanted to give everybody a taste of the kind of atmosphere I love to do. So a very brief intro to this segment. This takes place in Joshua Tree National Park. There's a two teachers and a group of kids that they are chaperoning on a sort of outdoor education trip. Your narrator is a woman named Amelia, or Mealy is her nickname. She's about 60. She's a widow. And she's on night duty with her teaching partner for the night, who everybody, kids and adults, calls CFK, which stands for Crazy Fucking Kerber, because no one ever really knows what he's going to do. And the only other things you need to know, these kids are all... they have special needs of one kind or another. They are either on the spectrum in some way, dealing with Asperger's or autism issues, or they have deep, deep anxiety of one kind or another. You'll hear about a naturalist who once worked with this group named Steph, who the narrator particularly bonded with at one point, and that woman has vanished. And the only other thing you probably need to know is that there's a group of girls in the story who are very anxious about this whole trip, and so they are taking that out by being really nasty to everybody on the trip. And so the teacher, Amelia, refers to them all the time as the pussycat girls. So I think that's all you need to know. Oh, except that if you've ever been to Joshua Tree, one of the weirdest things about it is that it's you're in the desert, in the Mojave Desert, seemingly in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and yet you're right over the mountains, over the hills, from the city of 29 Palms, where there's a giant marine base. And if you camp there, often in the middle of the night, they are flying training bomber missions, and they will drop bombs out in the desert, and so the ground will shake, and you'll get these weird flashes on the horizon. So
awesome.
That's our setup.
All right.
It's just really surreal. So they're trying to get the kids to bed. It's middle of the night. That's the setup. All right, here we go.
All righty.
Mealy, CFK calls when he's close, practically skipping. Labrador CFK. He comes right up beside me. Do the thing. As though I'm a character in his show, I find myself starting to ask what he means, pretending I don't know, saying my line. Instead, I make myself smile. Hold still, I say. He really does have wild eyes, dark yellow by starlight, like a bear's. Look at me. I don't really need to tell him that. It's just part of the script. Keep looking. The key, Steph taught me, is the wait. You have to wait. Let all the pathetic, insufficient tools we have for adjusting to the dark do what they can. Okay, I say, when it's time. Tell me when I disappear. Very, very slowly, I slide right. If I really thought back, I could probably remember her exact explanation. Rods, cones, the way our eyes sense movement or change as opposed to actual light in darkness, or the other way around. But as with stars, tortoises, the miracle of sparked kids' interests, the discovery of stillness inside myself as my husband withered, I am more about the thing than the explanation of the thing, though in the moment I can love the explanation too. Rad, CFK whispers suddenly. He starts to reach out but stops. I am less than 2 feet from him, maybe 15 degrees to his left, and, if we both hold still, completely invisible to him. The scream ricochets around the campground like gunfire, sets off an avalanche of tent zippers coming down, heads popping out like tumbling boulders, as I startle, and CFK glares everywhere, hands flying up into guard position, as though whatever's happening, he's going to box it. At first, I don't know where to look, but then I spot the streak of pink, the glary pussycat girl stumbling back across the flag line with both hands at the tie of her purple sweatpants. Her cheeks glisten with tears, or maybe sweat. He fucking grabbed me! Never even left my tent, calls one of the asshole boys, Fletcher. The worst of them. He's all the way out, standing barefoot in the sand with his flashlight on himself. bare gym pump chest, bare legs, black boxers. You appear to have left it now, I say, not yelling. I move toward the girl, leaving Fletcher to CFK. He's already on his way, but not before yelling to the pussycat, of course, if you'd stayed where you belonged, I flash a glare, make sure he sees. I almost say it because I'm really not sure he understands, and I want the kids clear on what has happened. Even in the midst of the era we're in, CFK apparently still needs this explained to him. But if he does, it's too late for him, and he's not my primary concern. I reach the pussycat tent at the same time as the girl, put my hand out to touch her shoulder. Come here, hon. Are you all right? Get away from me, Grandma. Which shouldn't bother me. Doesn't. Stay right where I am as she rips open the rain fly and her so-called friends gather her in, leaving me to stand right where I am, where I'll be if she needs me, or doesn't, a wall they can bang on, forget was there, sleep near. One last role I've realized I've come to like, or at least believe in. CFK has a different approach. Out! I hear him snarl from all the way across the camp. Get out! All of you! Inside the pussycat tent, flashlights switch off and whispers drop low. Mostly that's so they can listen to CFK, but they also know I'm still here. They're waiting for me to walk away. They won't know when I do. I allow myself a small smile by myself in the dark. My husband gone. My long-ago regional theater life, such as it was, even more gone. The few faculty friends I've made in a quarter century of my second career retired one by one. The hundreds of students I've loved and laughed with scattered into their lives, never looking back, and why should they? Nope, I hear CFK snap. Did I say you could get dressed? Put it back. Meaning everything, I realize. Pants, shoes. He's got all four asshole boys out of their tents, standing barefoot at attention in the desert cold in their underwear. Laughter flickers across a few of their faces but dies fast, a fire that won't catch. Behind them, the night shadows have reached the base of the rock wall, started across the sand. I dig my hands into my pockets. It's his show, but those boys should be in their tents. Us too. It bothers me that I can no longer hear him, and I lean forward, consider going over there, but for all kinds of reasons, I stay put. Stand sentinel over this tent and keep these girls inside it. This night needs no additional accelerant. I'm not even sure CFK is talking anymore, and he doesn't seem to be moving either. He, too, knows how to stand still, though he uses stillness differently. Teaching strategies, I have learned, are like martial arts disciplines, and we all pretty much subscribe to one form or another. Some are primarily about defense. Some, like mine, I hope, are for centering, locating chi. Some are for control, which can look and feel an awful lot like attack. Sometimes it is. Under our feet, the ground shudders again, the flash on the horizon beating the muffled boom bearing the muffled boom to our senses as the bomb drops and the mountains twitch like images on an old antenna TV. Settle again, or don't, quite. CFK has released the boys, which is a relief. He's not coming back yet, though. He's lurking outside tents, absolutely still, same as I am, except not quite, I hope. Guarding versus stalking, different disciplines. Abruptly I whirl, gaze flashing over flat sand toward the rocks. Shadows seem to slide off them, go still the split second before I catch them at it. Then I'm staring at my feet, thinking, snake, scorpion. What I see is my feet in sneakers, in sand, in moonlight, as though I'm standing on a beach at the lip of an ocean of shadow, ghost of an ocean, of the ooze we all crawled out of, evaporating now as our climate shifts and our age ends. That first year, the Steph year, we had campfires every night, and the kids wanted ghost stories. We had a woman then, an art teacher, young and Indian and beautiful and strange, subscriber to the mesmerize them teaching discipline, hardest to maintain at least once you're out of your 20s. She told a long, truly unsettling tale about hiking the perimeter of the Bloody Lake on the northern ridge in New Delhi and dead children following her. It kept us all spellbound for a good 15 minutes and the adults for another 10. Then our students just wanted s'mores and to throw graham crackers at each other. We let them wander back to their tents piecemeal. At the end, heat on my face, cold on my back, living children everywhere around me, and the empty desert, black desert beyond, I asked Steph if there were any good Joshua Tree ghost stories. To my surprise, she smiled, looked young, younger even than our art teacher, barely older than my students. She probably was. Not that I've heard, believe it or not, no good ones. There's just not that much alive out here, or that ever was alive, and the things that do die here die quietly, or That was the end of the smile and the looking young. Instead of a ghost story, she told us about a tent full of dead migrant laborers the Rangers had found a few months back, and then about a girl she'd known in 29 Palms whose mother had been gang-raped by Marines and left out here. The Marines got caught, confessed, tried to show police where they'd dumped the body, but she'd never been found. That was also the night Steph showed me the disappearing trick. Stood up, shook herself hard as though exercising her own thoughts, motioned me to stand, and pulled me away from the firelight into the shadows. She told me to look right at her, held still, slid right. The Pussycat Girls, I realize, have gone silent. Not only quiet, but still. Possibly they're sleeping. How long have I been standing here? Too long. The cold isn't just creeping up my sleeves or under my scarf and hat. It's gotten inside. I'm about to yell to CFK to let the damn boys back in their sleeping bags when I realize he already has. He's just standing too, ankle deep in shadows, still and prickly as a barrel cactus. I'm tired. I don't want to be out here anymore. I want my tent and my air mattress. I got it to discourage scorpion climbing, not for glampy comfort, though that's not a distinction any real desert adventurer would recognize. And I want my little hooded camping lantern and my book, my earplugs, so I won't hear my colleagues snoring, though I hate wearing those because then I can't hear the wind either or the desert quiet. I almost leave CFK to finish his up, but he waves and trots back over. We meet at the flag line. All clear, I say, a little more firmly than I believe, and CFK holds up a finger. We wait. Cold vibrates inside me as though I'm a cave, and it the living thing. I can almost hear it calling to itself in there, sounding echoes. I'm watching the shadows all around the camp, which is why I actually see the shooting star this time, less a single streak than a scatter, like a thrown sparkler that flashes surprisingly low over the ridge to our east and then winks out. Sucking in a breath, I make myself be here, remind myself to be. Cold, dark, kids, sand, crawling things, flying things, no things, emptiness, Joe memories, that stupid song we danced to at his father's third wedding, only words I remember or need to remember. Okay, says CF, all clear. We get maybe 5 steps from each other toward our tents before the shrieking erupts. And I will stop there.
Oh, I wanted you to...
You could have just carried on all night. I was leaning back in my chair, got my eyes... I was living that. I was...
Yes.
That was brilliant. Nicely read. Really well read.
Oh, thank you.
So when you go to make out the signed copy, that's X-T-I-N-A.
You got it. Make sure I know where to send.
Definitely. I hate to do this, but we are just about out of time for our show. And every week I say, you know, we have to, you know, make the shows longer or, you know, bring the guest on for like a whole hour. And we're definitely going to have to do that because we have so many amazing guests and we never have enough time.
I appreciate your having me back.
Yeah,
I really do.
Of course. Let us know where we can find you online.
So I have a Substack called Happy in Our Own Ways, which certainly fits everyone on this radio show. It's at glennhirschberg.substack.com. And I also have a glennhirschberg.com website that, like Kenzie, I am in the process of updating. And my audiobooks have all, 7 of my 11 books are now in audio from Encyclopocalypse Publications, and you can also find them on Audible. And Cemetery Dance has been bringing all of my stuff, bringing out the new books and bringing my older stuff back into print. So that's where you can find Tell Me When I Disappear.
Awesome. I was going to say for all of our guests out there, go out and look forward to Tell Me When I Disappear by Glenn Hirschberg. And I can't wait to have you back. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it. Thank you both.
Thank you for joining us, Glenn. Thank you. Have a great evening.
Sincere pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So much fun.
Well, sadly, I know. What a great, great guest. You always find the best people, which is nice. If it's down to me, it'd just be all miserable bastards. But no, you get all the best. So it is, and time has beaten us yet again. It's time where we say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Oh, yeah. one can tell. Oh, yeah, I'm the great pretender.
Like a cloud.